All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Friday, March 31st, last day of the month. And to borrow the cliche, yes, it's going out like a lion with some very unsettled weather coming through Wisconsin, rainy or stormy or really, really snowy, depending on where you are. We'll get a full update from weatherology meteorologist Jennifer Wachitsky coming up in about an hour, your local forecast after a lot of our commercial breaks. And so it's nice to have you along here where it's a beautiful but wet day here on Lake Wissota, but the snow is apparently coming before too much longer. Coming up this morning, well, how do we not talk about the criminal indictment coming of Donald Trump, a criminal indictment that has been a long time in coming, and yet to hear some people tell it is still this gross miscarriage of justice because of everything they're not seeing about his life that he has led, and that finally there might be some accountability in this case. And then the Mar-a-Lago documents case, and then maybe some of these other cases. So we'll see. But this one starts with why he wasn't upfront with voters playing fair and square with how you fund your presidential campaign. Also, WMC, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, traumatizes a rape victim, proving there is no bottom. The political machine that is ostensibly a business group twisted the words of a rape victim and a judge in order to produce a grotesque campaign ad meant to benefit conservative Supreme Court candidate Dan Kelly. And it's not the only group engaged in disgusting techniques designed to scare voters who might otherwise support Judge Janet Protasiewicz in next week's election. We will hear more in a few minutes from Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. This is an anniversary day, not exactly a happy anniversary, but for all the talk about the state's 1849 abortion ban, well, it was 174 years ago today, March 31st, 1849, that Wisconsin's first governor, Nelson Dewey, signed into law a near-total abortion ban. And so State Senator Kelda Royes will join us at the top of our next hour to outline the legislation introduced by Democrats in Madison that would restore women's health care rights and undo the damage brought by right-wing U.S. Supreme Court justices last year when they repealed Roe v. Wade and put that 1849 ban back into effect. As we do most Fridays at 7:30, we will talk to author and media commentator Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times, about media coverage of this week's events. And our Friday guest sportscaster Dan Schumacher is back, and he's going to talk as well about his upcoming switch away from serving as athletic director to the UW Eau Claire Blue Golds. Our call of the day today is to ask, what's your main reason for voting on Tuesday? Is it about a person, a race, an issue? Is there a particular school referendum that is really important to you? We talked yesterday about something like 84 more school district referendums are on the ballot next week. So we'd like to know what is motivating you to vote next Tuesday. You can reach us at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. You can send a note by email, radio at upnorthnewswi.com, and upnorthnewswi.com is where you'll find the work that my colleagues at Up North News are doing. Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media and its radio stations, but we are darn pleased and proud to be associated with Civic Media and appear on these radio stations from 6 to 8 on weekday mornings. You can find us on social media, Up North News WI, and also on the Up North News Facebook page or the Civic Media Facebook page, you can catch a live video feed of this radio show. And we'd love to have your comments on there. We might actually show them on the screen here during the live feed as well. The phone calls come into one Aaron Zommers, who is down at our Madison studio, where, again, you're also going to switch over from rain to snow at some point, I guess, but maybe, I don't know, not get as much as we're going to, but it's still going to be a challenging weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately. Right now, it's the same as on Lake Wissota. It's a beautiful day, but it is very wet.
Oh yeah, there's thunder. It's got everything. But you know, March gives us that full mixed bag of things that are going on here. We'll, like I said, we'll get a forecast update and we'll come through it as best we can. Hey, don't want to forget that on Monday, we will talk to Dan Kaufman. Dan Kaufman is the author of the book, The Fall of Wisconsin. It is the quintessential history of Wisconsin politics that took us to the point where Republicans essentially took over state government in 2010 and throughout, you know, the past decade. And it's, you know, it wasn't just rooted in one election in 2010. There was a lot that worked up toward it, starting way back in the progressive era of Wisconsin. Dan Kaufman has an amazing book that if you haven't read by now, you really should. He now has a new article online in the New Yorker about the state Supreme Court race. And again, sets up more recent history and tells us more about how we got to this point, the differences between the candidates and the stakes that are involved. Aaron, did you watch any of the Brewers-Cubs opener to get the season going?
I did not. How'd it go?
You are a smart man.
I had it out
the corner of my eye, and I kept seeing a zero, a zero, a zero, a zero. And sure enough, that's what the Brewers did on opening day. Cubs pitcher Marcus Stroman worked six scoreless innings and worked his way to a 4-0 victory over the Brewers. Milwaukee was limited to just a couple of singles, four singles. And Brewers ace Corbin Burnes allowed four hits and issued three walks. They're off today. Right-hander Brandon Woodruff and left-hander Justin Steele will take the mound Saturday afternoon.
Well, all right, let's take a break. 161 more.
Exactly. We can still go 161-1. Yeah, it's totally possible. We'll talk about the Trump indictment and more after this. You're up north. Seeger from Beverly Hills Cop 2.
No matter what you think you hold, you'll find it's not enough. No matter who you think you know, you won't get through.
Do we think that this is finally the shakedown, the takedown, the breakdown of Donald Trump, as Bob Seeger sang way back then? Possibly. I mean, it is a first in terms of a criminal indictment of a former president. And it's historic in this nature, not just the indictment itself. It's the first time we're really aware with evidence in court of a former president criming. Here's the thing. Indictments don't typically come for people to keep their nose clean, shall we say. And in Donald Trump's case, that has never been his modus operandi, shall we say. As a business person, maybe that suits you really well, looking for the shortcuts, looking for the payoffs where possible. But here's the thing. We're not going to get into all the legal points behind it because it's out there. I'm sure you could have or should have seen it by now. We want to get right to why this matters, why this matters to you. Why are you going to hear about this for weeks, months, perhaps longer than that, because these court cases take a while. And so you're right to ask why. Why do I have to see this? Why is this here? And I would take it all the way back to when Trump first announced he was running for president. And he talked about being a successful businessman. He said he was a multimillionaire. He might have called himself a billionaire. And one of the things that we expect of every presidential candidate, we expect this of them, and if you don't, you should. We expect them to show their taxes. We expect them to show what they've done with their money, because you can commit a lot of crime with money. You never have to pull out a gun on anybody, but you can do a lot of criming with a checkbook. And we kind of like to know that our presidents are clean. We like to know that they pay their taxes because the rest of us do. We need to know if our presidential candidates are in any way indebted to a bank, to a corporation, to a foreign government, whatever the case may be. And that's going to be seen on those financial disclosure forms. And what was Donald Trump so famous for doing? He was so famous for doing I'm going to do it. I'm going to release my taxes. Yeah, but they're being audited right now. I'm going to release a healthcare plan. It's just not ready yet. I'm going to release an infrastructure plan. It's going to be a big, beautiful infrastructure plan. He was the master of promising things and then delaying the delivery of it. Same goes for the documents at Mar-a-Lago that he was not supposed to have there. Whether he did anything with them or not, and that is a big question, but he wasn't supposed to have them physically there in the first place. And when the National Archives said, hey, can we get those back? Yep, going to get to it. And then there was the search warrant. And, you know, now I think you have them all. And maybe they still don't have them all because that is the way Donald Trump operates. It is a lack of transparency. So does this matter to you and me? It matters in this way. We held an election in 2016. And in 2016, Donald Trump shocked the world by winning, by beating Hillary Clinton by as narrow a margin as possible, by just over 20,000 votes here in Wisconsin, a handful of votes in Michigan, and a handful of votes in Pennsylvania. Together, 70,000 votes out of millions and millions of votes that were cast. So you have to ask yourself, how would folks have voted differently if Donald Trump were honest about his taxes, about his finances, about his character, about his actions? How many folks would have voted differently? Pardon the language. How many people would have voted differently had they known that Donald Trump was screwing around behind his wife's back shortly after giving birth to his child? How many people who weren't crazy about Hillary Clinton and stayed home on Election Day 2016 would have decided to go ahead and vote to make sure to vote against Trump had they known what his financial situation really was, whether he paid his taxes and whether he had paid off a woman because of an affair? And I think because of the tawdriness of describing Stormy Daniels as a porn star, I think that leaves many people who are inclined to support Trump to kind of give him a pass, like, oh, there's something seedy about her or the circumstances or whatnot. Take away whatever her occupation is. The whole thrust of the matter is, did Donald Trump pay money to somebody to cover up for an affair? And you, Mr. or Ms. Donald Trump supporter, always got to ask you to put the shoe on the other foot. I want you to imagine hearing that and hearing that Hillary Clinton had paid off somebody to not talk about an affair, or Barack Obama or anybody else. And I have to say, I think that I doubt you would be similarly defensive of those Democrats as you are of Donald Trump. And that, again, really illustrates the big difference between the parties these days, unfortunately. You have far too many people on the conservative side of the spectrum defending the people who invaded our Capitol on January 6th in a violent insurrection. And the reason I know this isn't a both sides thing is, let's take, for example, the firebombing of an abortion clinic in Wisconsin and an arrest that was made this week. There's nobody that's going to say on the progressive side of things, oh, he's getting a raw deal, it's fake news. It's like, no, if somebody's committing a crime, we actually want them to be prosecuted. And if a candidate isn't being honest on their finances and not letting, the IRS know what they are and aren't paying taxes on, that matters to some voters. Maybe not every voter, but maybe enough voters to affect an election. And that's the thing. Donald Trump's very lengthy rambling statement yesterday was less a defense and more of a confessional, as he talked about all of the things that he has done that he keeps saying he didn't do, but the evidence is clear that he did, whether it was his conduct with Russia or his conduct with Ukraine, his conduct with the Stormy Daniels affair and so forth. It's it's a confession of that lack of transparency that makes a difference to just enough voters. Now, there are others who are saying that maybe because this one was pre-becoming president, and that there are larger, more serious cases potentially coming from the Department of Justice, that this case should have waited, that the Manhattan DA should have waited to file this indictment. Fact of the matter is, we don't know what the U.S. Department of Justice is doing. And I know a lot of us think that it is taking way too long. And plenty of other people say, of course it's going to take this long. It is extremely complex. And you don't want to bring charges until you've dotted all the I's and crossed the T's. But we don't know for sure that that's the case. And so at some point, this Manhattan DA probably looked at DOJ and said, I honestly don't know if you're doing anything or if you're just stalling and have no plans to file. So I'm just going to go ahead and file this case. And so they did. And it just goes to, again, show why. When at some point, again, coming back to Bob Seger's Shakedown song about Beverly Hills Cop, you know, criminals eventually commit enough crimes that they get caught. And in Donald Trump's case, you know, the New York Times editorial this morning says a pattern of disregard for the law often leads to a criminal indictment. And that is the outcome that Mr. Trump now faces. They go on to write, Trump completely transformed the relationship between the presidency and the rule of law, often asserting that a president was above the law. Something that I thought we got over after the Nixon years, when Nixon said, well, when the president does it, it's not a crime. That's not true. Had Gerald Ford not pardoned him, Richard Nixon most assuredly would have been charged with crimes, and rightly so. It happens in many other countries, many other Western democracies that have brought charges against a former leader for breaking the law. And this is something that now should be considered by judges, potentially juries, yes, with criminal penalties on the line. And it leads people to say, well, will Donald Trump ever, will he wiggle out of this one? And he might very well, because again, a jury is made up of Americans from all walks of life. And yes, it is extremely possible that he wiggles out of this, much like the two impeachments. Think about that for a moment. Both of those impeachments were ironclad. What Donald Trump was accused of doing in those impeachment trials, he did. But when your jury has just enough people in there who will be sympathetic or apologetic, you don't get convicted. That's how things work here. But that's no reason not to bring the charges in the first place. We don't wrap former presidents in bubble wrap and say, you know, well, we can't touch you anymore, whatever you need to do. Donald Trump is most likely going to face more criminal charges based on that amazing phone call. He called it a beautiful phone call. It was a tragic phone call that he made to state officials in Georgia, saying that he just wants to find another, whatever it was, 11,700 votes or something like that. I mean, it was the language of a mob boss, where you just don't, you usually have somebody else convey it. And that's what Trump had done for years, was to have Michael Cohen take care of things. And Michael Cohen took care of the payment to Stormy Daniels so that she would not reveal the affair prior to Election Day. Matt in Janesville is calling in. Matt, I got about 1 minute. What's on your mind?
Yeah, my concern is gas is $3.40 this morning. And, you know, it's going higher and higher every day. I don't care what Trump, who he's sleeping with in office. Look at Bill Clinton when he was office with Monica Lewinsky. Nothing happened. Who cares? Under Trump, our leadership, we had cheaper gas, cheaper food. This morning, I tried buying groceries for my kids. It's so expensive, it's to the point where I have to get another job.
Sure. Like, okay, Matt, that's a fair point. I appreciate it. I'm up against a break here, but I know exactly the point you're making. Is that, again, this is how I started. Why does it matter to me? Why does it matter in the here and now when there are these other things going on? And my response is quite simple. Walking and chewing gum. Yeah, the people who are bringing this case also have to buy groceries and buy gas, and we all do. And what makes it easier is if we have presidents who play by the rules and are held accountable if they don't. Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil continues this conversation next. You're up north. Back now on Up North News Radio, and we're going to wrap up the week with our national correspondent out in Los Angeles, Kia Vakil, who is the national correspondent for Courier Newsroom, the parent company for Up North News and our other state-based news outlets. Kia, how are you?
I'm well, Pat. How are you?
I'm good. I could tell I still have vacation brain because I was writing something about Courier Newsroom and I was mentioning Up North News and our other state-based outlets in Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida. And it took me forever to come up with the one I was missing, which of course is
Arizona.
I could not. I was just like, what state am I missing? And I realized I just hadn't done the full circle around the country there, but Copper Courier out there. Kia works for the whole team here. He's been doing yeoman's work for Up North News following the state Supreme Court race, looking at it from all kinds of national standpoints, like donors, right down to the individual level. So we're going to cover that in some of the stories that Kia has done for us lately here. And let's start with one of your more recent works. And that's all about who's spending big. This is far and away the most expensive state Supreme Court race, certainly in Wisconsin, probably many other states as well. So what can you tell us about just how big it's been and who all of the big players are in this race?
Yeah. So the money pouring into this race has been crazy. I think we're nearing 45 million, I saw this morning, according to Wisconsin Politics, which is an online blog or website. And that is an astonishing amount of money for a state Supreme Court race. But the stakes are really high. And the groups that are getting involved are, you know, the Protasiewicz campaign has raised a lot of money. I think they're at 12, 13 million in their most recent filing. Dan Kelly's campaign has not raised very much money, but he has outside, you know, dark money or right-wing groups that are propping him up. These include the, you know, big business lobbying group, the WMC in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. which has spent, I think I just checked and it was nearly $6 million. And these ads are really just ugly, you know, yes. race baiting, soft on crime ads, nothing that a big business group with in any realistic way, you know, could justify as business adjacent. It's fear mongering, like the ads against Mandela Barnes last year.
And they worked. So you've got them, you know, breaking out of their lane of, you know, we're business people. This would be good for business. No, it's we'll say anything to get mm-hmm. this person elected, but to go a step before that is the whole notion that you have a candidate in Dan Kelly who is relying upon the basically limitless corporate money that's floating around in politics rather than him raising the money. It just tells you what kind of a post-Citizens United world we are living in these days.
Yeah. And what you see when, you know, Janet is raising millions and millions of dollars, that means a lot of small money donors are inspired or motivated or otherwise donating to her. Dan Kelly is not getting that. That means he's not exciting anybody, and he's relying on these outside groups to make up the difference. And those groups include, you know, anti-abortion groups, this PAC called Women Speak Out, which is bankrolled by Dick Uihlein and, you know, dark money groups and other billionaires. There's another organization called the American Principles Project PAC, which has run extremely transphobic and homophobic videos, ads, have sent really heinous texts to voters. I had a story about that as well. These are the groups that are backing, you know, Dan Kelly. And on the other side, Protasiewicz does have obviously liberal money behind her as well. You know, Every Town for Gun Safety, the Wisconsin Conservation Voters, Planned Parenthood.
Better Wisconsin Together, you know, exactly, the usual suspects there as well. Yes.
Yeah. But those groups, you know, there's just a stark difference in A, the amount that's being spent to back Kelly versus Janet, and where it's coming from and how it's being used. So you're getting a pretty clear contrast in the candidates, you know, who supports them and what kind of campaigns they're running.
Yes. And when you get to the kind of campaign, that takes us to the story that you did on the group that was sending just these homophobic texts and videos to voters for folks that hadn't seen that. What was that about?
Yeah. And, you know, there's a chance some of your listeners got one of these texts. They've sent at least two, probably more. But, you know, one of them, they basically both target transgender children and accuse, you know, Janet of being allied with and supported by people who want to, quote, trans our children.
Trans our children. They're turning it into a verb now.
They're turning it into a verb. They're saying the woke left has a, quote, unending thirst to trans our children. I don't know what that means. That's just buzzword gibberish to appeal to the most online homophobic people out there. No one is transing your kids. You know, teachers aren't doing that. If they're calling a kid by the pronoun they want to go by, that's just a teacher, you know, being compassionate and helping a kid who has questions about their gender identity. Yeah, some kids wrestle with that. And sometimes that means they want to go by different pronouns. That does not mean that teachers are transing your kids. It does not mean that, you know, somehow electing Janet will bring down all Wisconsin families into some weird environment. It's just nonsense.
But they want that imagery that Janet Protasiewicz is doing something to your children in much the same way they want that Janet Protasiewicz, like Mandela Barnes, like Tony Evers, they're literally opening up the prison gates and letting people out, which is rich coming from supporters of Dan Kelly, somebody who hasn't put anybody in jail because he was never a judge. He got appointed by Scott Walker. He got defeated as soon as he ran for re-election, and yet he's trying to get back on the court, but he's not a judge. And so for any of this to focus on actual crimes that, you know, Janet Protasiewicz may have, you know, administered in her courtroom only helps make the point Dan Kelly's never been a judge.
No. And I would note he also was paid to consult on efforts to overturn the 2020 election, which, you know, I think is a crime on a personal level. Yes. So, and again, these texts are, you know, you can, I'm sure there are people out there who struggle with the idea of their kids, you know, becoming, you know, wanting to change pronouns or transition. That's understandable. But these texts are so ugly and these videos are so aggressively homophobic that I would like to think that they would repel more people. And one of the folks I interviewed, you know, actually lives in Minnesota, so he can't vote in this election, but he did say that it prompted him, getting that text made him donate to Janet because he found it so appalling that he wanted to send a message that this is not what he would, that this is not effective. And we'll find out next week if it's effective or not. I'm extremely skeptical. We don't live in the 1950s anymore where, you know, and that's what all this these ads do. They reran basically a shot by shot remake of the Willie Horton ad. Mm-hmm. They are pretending like we live in, you know, this utopian 1950s suburbia, which is, again, utopian for like three people.
Yeah, exactly. And what they're putting out there are fantasies, are fiction, misinformation. And a big part of what we try to do at Up North News and at Civic Media is to help people understand the difference between misinformation, things that aren't rooted in fact, things that didn't ever really happen, versus things that did. And that takes us to your story about Anna Igler and a very real first-person account of the stakes of the state Supreme Court race when it comes to whether women have control over their own bodies.
Yeah, so Anna is an OBGYN in Brown County, Wisconsin. She's also a mom. She has two kids right now. In 2020, she was pregnant with what would then have been her second child, but she was, you know, at her 24-week check-in, there was an abnormality on the scan. And, you know, basically, the long story short is her baby would have had catastrophic abnormalities. It's just,
It's like the ultimate nightmare when you hear about microcephaly.
Yeah,
you know, where the head is significantly smaller, the brain isn't developing, and the fetus either fetal demise before labor, or you know, after labor is just a terrible nightmare scenario of watching this suffering. And parents, you know, should have the right to at least consult with their doctor about what they would choose to do about it. And Anna tells her story about her being able to make that choice.
Yeah. And it's one of those, the saddest interviews I've ever done as a reporter, because, you know, the pain is still fresh for her. She wanted her that child. But she also knew that if she didn't have an abortion, the child would be born with horrible defects and would die most likely in a NICU. And yeah, she was, you know, unfortunately she did have to travel to Colorado to get this done. And this was in 2020, pre Roe being struck down. Every state has kind of different laws around the point of viability. And she was at 25 weeks, I believe. So, but her case highlights the importance of leaving this up to professionals and like people with a background in reproductive care, and not politicians who are upholding an 1849 law that, you know, was passed before we knew germs were a thing. So, or that germs cause bacteria. And, you know, Anna's story, she's since had a second child. And anytime, you know, she's spoken about this in other venues as well, she is very, you know, committed to reproductive rights, because both in her personal experience and in her day-to-day life as an OB, she sees the impact it has if you take away the woman's right to make decisions about their health, their family's health, their potential child's health. And that's what's on the line next week. If Dan Kelly wins, he would almost certainly uphold this 1849 ban. And Janet Protasiewicz has said she supports reproductive freedom, and so there's a reasonable chance she would not.
And if there is a sense of deja vu about all of this, yes, we had a similar story about a year ago with Heather Martell, formerly of Chippewa Falls, talking about, again, having to travel to a faraway clinic at about 23 weeks into a pregnancy that also was going to have a devastating ending. And so she made that decision as the parent to not put, you know, that fetus through that level of suffering, and yet talked about the ugliness, the people at that clinic outside of the clinic in Minnesota who were essentially harassing her and her husband as they went to go do the most painful thing they have ever done. And the fact that you would do that in person, or that you would do it through texts, or that you would do it through the political ads, is a sad commentary. But it's by bringing those stories up, by these women being willing to talk to people like you and me, that perhaps we get a Supreme Court election where voters are as informed as possible. And Kia, I can't thank you enough for doing that coverage for us, for taking on these duties, and sharing these stories and bringing some very personal stakes into this race.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, it's Anna's story is so remarkable that I tried to do as little as possible, but just share it. But yeah, voters deserve to know what's on the line. And there's a lot on the line. It's abortion rights. It's democracy. It's workers' rights. It's the environment. You know, it's rare that one state level election has such big stakes, but this one really does.
You know, this was going to be a different segment. We were going to talk about banning rainbow songs and how people think a Michelangelo statue is pornography. And what was some of the other? That John Fetterman is apparently a fake, you know, that he's been in the hospital, and there's a fake senator from Pennsylvania. We were going to get into the goofball stuff. I guess I don't doubt we'll still have things to talk about after the election, Kia.
No, there's like 100 new goofball stories a day on the internet. So yes, there will be no shortage in the future weeks.
Right. And all we can do with some of these goofballs is vote on Tuesday. Kia, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You bet.
We did not get a chance to get into the WMC commercials. We're going to do that in our next segment after we take a little break for music and do a little history lesson as well. I was so caught up in the Brewers opening their season that I forgot the Bucks are still playing, but they had as poor a Thursday as the Brewers did. They were steamrolled by the Boston Celtics on Thursday night, 140-99. tying a game back in December is their most lopsided loss of the year. And so Boston wins the season series with the Bucks 2-1, and that would give the Celtics the tiebreaker if both teams finish with the same record. Boston, you'll recall, beat the Bucks in 7 games in last season's East semifinals. The Bucks will host the Philadelphia 76ers on Sunday. And again, the Brewers lost to the Cubs 4-0. Off today, they'll pick it up again at Wrigley Field on Saturday afternoon. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll have today's history lesson and a little moment of music right after this. You're up, Tom. Those of you of a certain age, I have to ask, where does that take you back to? As you hear the title song to the soon-to-be-famous film back in 1984, where Kevin Bacon brings dancing to a small town. And it's all in the movie Footloose. This day in 1984, it takes me back to Shenanigans on Water Street and the dance floor there. On this day in music history, for Kenny Loggins, I should have looked up. That was probably, what, his 25th, you know, of soundtrack song that he had. I mean, he was just the king of soundtracks during that time. You had Danger Zone from Top Gun. You had I'm All Right from Caddyshack. He was just a tour de force of movie themes. Let's see. On this day in 1958 was the release of this song by Chuck Berry. Isn't it something how, you know, just the guitar intro of a song, whether it's Johnny B. Good right there or Footloose a moment before that, that, you know, it just takes a couple of strums on a guitar to bring that song to life. Chuck Berry released it this day in 1958. He said the song was named after his piano player, Johnny Johnson, and the street where he grew up, Good Avenue. Or it's an urban legend. I'll let you decide. There are a couple of birthdays in the music business today, but they are way back in the music business. This is the birthday in 1685 of Johann Sebastian Bach in Germany, and this is the birthday in 1732 of Joseph Haydn, who was born in Austria. And Aaron's probably one of the few people that knew those two shared a birthday and really could have fooled me by playing a little Bach and a little Haydn and completely screwing that up for me. So thanks for not doing that.
Yeah, I could have had you guess, but...
You know, actually, you could have, and at some point, maybe you should do a little music quiz for me, and let's find out just what an uncultured slob I am. So just keep that in mind for some future birthday.
Sounds good.
Some other future history segment. The Eiffel Tower was officially opened in Paris on this day in 1889. I don't have audio of this, but this was the day in 1967 where Jimi Hendrix lit his guitar on fire for the first time during a performance in London. He went to the hospital for minor burns afterwards because practice makes perfect. This is the birthday for Herb Alpert, who's famous for his trumpet playing, but he's also, near as I can see, the only person who has gone to number one on the charts, both as an instrumentalist and as a vocalist.
You see this guy, this guy's in love with you. Yes, I'm.
So there's the one that he was a vocalist on, This Guy's in Love with You. And of course, if you look just at from an instrumental standpoint, everybody remembers Rise. And up comes this very famous guitar riff. Of course, I was 4 bars too early on that. There it is. The one that Biggie later made famous with the song Hypnotize. So again, a happy 88th birthday to Herb Alpert. And then finally, on this day in 1972, the band America, which was kind of novel at the time, like a band named America, their self-titled debut album hit number one, yes, in America. So there you go, Erica, America with their self-titled debut album hitting number one on this day in 1972. All right, we mentioned at the top of the show, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it with Kia Vakil in our last segment, that at the center of the election for Wisconsin Supreme Court are just truckloads of ads, and many of them by Justice Janet Protasiewicz directly. And many others on behalf of former Justice Dan Kelly by outside groups. And it really, it's a damning indictment of the current system that a candidate like Dan Kelly can say, well, yeah, I'm not raising nearly as much money as Janet Protasiewicz, but I don't have to because the cavalry is going to come and rescue me, meaning the outside groups. And he says that he can't coordinate with them, but you know, everybody knows what those outside groups are going to say and what they're going to do. And especially in Supreme Court races and state attorney general's races, the ads so frequently are about crime and trying to scare voters. When that's not something an attorney general does, and it's not something a state Supreme Court justice does, they don't put people behind bars. But it's what motivates voters, and so that's why you see them in the campaign ads. Well, one of Dan Kelly's helpers, the huge business lobby, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, has been running ads with featuring a rape case. And the victim of that rape says that she has been re-traumatized, re-victimized by the attention, and that the ad gets things wrong about her rape case. In the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, she has to be identified just by her first name, Emily. She said she did get phone calls about the commercial before it came up, but that, you know, once it came up, she saw the way that the ads had been twisted. And central to that is that Emily, the victim, essentially put her faith in the judge, Janet Protasiewicz, to hand down a fair sentence. And so Protasiewicz did indeed hand down a sentence. It was not one that the defense or the prosecution disagreed with. But what the ad said was along the lines of that Protasiewicz, you know, ignored the victim or disregarded the victim. And that wasn't the case. It was that the victim left it to Protasiewicz and gave her that discretion. And so the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel story goes on to explain how Protasiewicz made the decision on the length of prison time, and that it was something, again, that was not controversial at the time. The WMC ad also went on to say that Emily had been left for dead after the attack. That was not true either. But again, it makes for good copy. And so WMC is claiming that everything in there is factual. It certainly can appear that way if you twist things enough. If somebody's lying there for 5 seconds, are they left for dead, as opposed to, you know, hours or more like that? And, you know, if a judge is allowed to make up that sentence, are they ignoring the victim, or is the victim, you know, again, putting their faith in the court system? It's these kinds of things that make campaign ads tricky to begin with, but they're effective because they scare people. And we felt it was important to make sure you knew how the victim was completely unhappy with how this handed down. More next hour. You're up north.